The Fan on Demand. Bob the Conqueror. Bob the Absolute. Bob the Infallible. Bob the Keeper of Pet Roosters. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Four o'clock. This is Primetime. I'm Bob McCowan. Without further ado, we're going to take you to the a news conference being held by the owner of the Baltimore Ravens, Steve Bisciotti, as he responds to the Friday ESPN.com Outside the Lines feature that ran. Let's go to Baltimore and see what's going on.
React, and is it still in your gut, your distaste for what
What was my feeling when I read it was a couple things. I mean, I think it says it took them 11 days to write it, but they gave us 2 hours to respond. So they called Kevin and asked to answer some questions. And from what I understand, Van Valkenburg had already tweeted out that there was a bombshell coming. So needless to say, he wasn't that interested in our answers if he had already written the thing and he was giving us an hour to respond to it. So I thought that was a little unfair.
Steve, as you've gone through this entire storyline process, as you've seen the media coverage, as you saw the ESPN.com article, from your side of the story, what is the part you most feel is not getting out?
Oh, I think it's getting out. I think that what's obvious is that the majority of the sources are people that work for Ray. Almost everything in there is anonymous, but it's clear from the subject matter that it's Ray's attorney, it's Ray's agent, and it's Ray's friends. And, they are building a case for reinstatement. And the best way to build a case for reinstatement is to make everybody else look like they're lying. Their accusations didn't jive with what we knew was fact.
Joe?
In the short term, the statement we've just been issued, you try to address specific points that you feel are inaccurate. In the long term, how long do you feel it's going to take to win back the trust of the fans and to restore it to where it was before all this happened?
I don't know. I really don't. People are going to decide for themselves. And like I said, we admitted to a lot of things last week. And I had an interview with Jane, and I had an interview with Jeff, and I had an interview with James Brown. And I saw I answered 34 questions with James Brown. And then I found out, actually, I think this morning, that there were only like five of them on the news. So I had thought that we had gotten our side of the story out, but as it turned out, that very few of the 60 answers that I gave to those three sources were actually ever put out or published or something like that. So I realized then that I'd be getting a lot of the same questions because y'all hadn't seen them.
Steve, how come you think the league in this case gave Rice such leniency when it's somewhat the MO of the commissioner to end up harsher penalties?
You know, that's a good question, but history has shown that two games is the largest suspension for domestic violence in the league. There might be one game in some instances, but two was the max. And so I was expecting minimum of two, and I was expecting a maximum of 4 to 6 at the time, because that's what was being relayed to me was the typical suspension.
Hey, Steve, some of the strongest reactions to the entire case have included some who have called for the or for you to suspend or fire someone within your organization. Your response to anyone who might have that opinion about what should be done at this point?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Roger and what he does, and that's just that's par for the course for something like this. I think when Mueller's done his investigation, they're going to see things that they can do better. We figured out pretty much the few things that we could have gotten done, and I mentioned last week a couple times that through the course of this, when they raised dropped Janae's charge and raised to a felony in the third degree, that's when we backed off and basically got in line between the prosecutor and the NFL. So I said last week, I'll say it again, I'm sorry that we didn't push harder to get that tape. It seems to me, in hindsight, that we certainly had the leverage to say to Ray and his lawyer that we can't have him play on our team until we see that last bit of evidence. And so that's what we're dealing with now. I am thoroughly aware of what the league expects the team to do in instances like this, and the people in my organization did their jobs. Their jobs as they're defined and as they're expected to be met by the league. So nobody's losing a job here. I'm very confident of that.
Steve, in this message you have, here are the texts, not as told to someone and then misquoted in the article, but verbatim. There's a lot of language like this throughout. And we have the text here. What was your reaction when you saw the text and the reaction that Ray had in that article to the text and then actually seeing the text here? What's your response to these text messages the day that he was released and you had seen the second video?
I have no reaction to them. My reaction was my communication with Ray. I have no reaction to my own text. The reaction that I had to one of his friends saying that he couldn't believe his eyes, I think that the facts speak for themselves, that story was manufactured to try and tie my promise to take care of him down the road as hush money. Let me say, if I cut a guy making $6 million a year, if I'm promising him to be by his side and hire him for $100,000 a year 5 years from now so that he can help Harry Swain in our player development department, if that is considered worthy of him going along, I find that rather absurd, because it would take him 250 years to make back the $25 million that I took away from him by cutting him. So,
have you had any more text messages with him since these?
No.
Sure.
No.
Steve, could you clarify what appears to be conflicting statements between the letter you sent out to the fan base saying you had not seen the video until it came out, mm-hmm. and Ozzie saying that Ray told the truth. This is that Ozzie and you have different accounts.
Yeah, I think it's in there, isn't it?
Yes.
It's in the document.
Okay, a lot of people haven't had a chance to fully read that. We just received that right before the press conference.
Jane?
Steve, the ESPN article on Friday clearly paints a picture of an organization, your organization, that it tried to mislead, misdirect, mm-hmm. deceive, and then poo-poo an allegation of domestic violence and dealing with the league to get Ray Rice a good deal. How do you respond to that picture that is presented in that article?
Well, it's a bad picture, and that's why we responded with the facts that we know them to be. I'm not happy with it. Like I said, I said better late than never when we made the decision to cut Ray, and I stand by that. You know, somebody else can say that, well, it's too late now. Well, I can't respond to that. If all I can do is try and correct our wrongs and do what we think is right, and that that decision to cut Ray Monday was that. And so I can't I can't please those people. I think we didn't do enough.
Steve, in the report, they say that Darren learned a few hours afterwards the details of the video. First, is that true? And if it's true, did he share that information of the details of what was relayed to him in the video to anybody in the organization?
Isn't it in there?
We just got the statement 10 minutes before we walked in.
I told you you should have given it to him early.
I can't read it, Doug.
You can't.
No speed reading.
Say it again, Jameson.
So basically, in the report, they say that Darren, a few hours after or a day after the incident, that he was told, relayed the details of what happened on that video.
Yeah.
Is that true? And if it's true, did then Darren share that information to anybody else in the organization?
Yeah, I believe he did. I believe he communicated off of the description that policeman did, which was off of what we now have as an incredibly shaky video. Have you seen that? Okay. So that was what the policeman was describing the scene to Darren off of that original botchy tape that kept going backwards and things like that. So his description to Darren, Darren took notes and gave his description as he understood it to John and Ozzy, I believe.
Hey, Didi.
Dick says here that he does regret the fact that y'all decided to leave the fact-finding to the court system and the league. But can you just take us inside those conversations? Once you knew that Rice's attorney had that video, why did you decide that you wouldn't conduct an investigation, that you would step back?
We decided it because it had been elevated to a felony. And so it was very clear to us that they were going to get any piece of information they want or to get anything they want. So we had already tried and were rebuffed when it came to that video, which was the only thing that we had asked for and the only thing that we had been turned down a few times. So I think it was a simple business decision to stand down when it was elevated to a felony.
But now when you say they have the power to get anything, by they, do you mean the courts?
The prosecutor, right? So I'm quite sure that when that prosecutor decided to drop Janae's misdemeanor and raise to a felony, that they were going to be very aggressive in their pursuit of justice.
But were you personally curious? Personally, inside? Were you
No. No. No, I was not. No.
Jill?
What types of conversations were you able to have with the NFL regarding the investigation as far as you guys go ahead and do your investigation? And did they say to you, you guys can do your investigation too? Were there conversations like that?
No, there weren't. They didn't tell us to do anything. And I think that Dick had called the league attorney maybe a couple times. So my point, Dick, keep me informed, let me know. So if Dick heard anything, he called the league and said, is there any more information? One time I saw Roger at the NFL meetings, and I said, where are we with this? And he said, nowhere until the police investigation is concluded. And so that's the extent of what I did at that time. I thought that was enough. We can't lead an investigation and be stepping on the prosecutor's shoes and the NFL. Just, we can't do it.
You were listening to Steve Bisciotti, who's the owner of the Baltimore Ravens, responding in depth to the ESPN.com article for Outside the Line, a feature that ran on Friday that we talked about on this very program, that made some very pointed suggestions about the process used by the Baltimore Ravens in investigating the Ray Rice situation. In essence, the Ravens themselves are denying much of the substance of that story. However, I jumped in here because I think there's... One always expects in a situation like this there to be something explosive that might happen, and I'm not getting the sense that that's going to be the case, and what they're talking about is a lot of inside stuff that I'm not quite convinced you as the audience, or me sitting here, really care that much about. Suffice to say, we will monitor this news conference, and if, in fact, anything explosive does come out of it, we will pass it along to you. But meanwhile, we'll go back to our regularly scheduled programming, which for this Monday, as always, is your telephone calls. 870-0590, star 590, and 1-888-666-0590. Take a quick break here, and then we'll take phone calls right up to the top of the hour. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Twenty-four past the hour now. Brent will be in here at the top of the clock. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Mark Ingram, running back of the New Orleans Saints. Darren Heitner of Forbes magazine, and perhaps Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, coming up on the program. You have the phone numbers to call. If you get a line to ring, let it ring. We'll get to you as soon as we can. Well, if you don't have it, it's 870-0590, star 590, or 1-888-666-0590. Anything you want to talk about, as always. Let's go. Brad in Toronto, you're first today. Hi.
How's it going, Bob?
Fine.
So we had a great weekend of football. Sorry your Browns lost, but it's a good weekend of football. It's been a couple of good weeks. And I think the overshadowing here with this craziness of Ray Rice, somebody needs to fall on their sword. You know, when things happen in big corporations, somebody goes down. Or, you know, in life. So why can't Goodell see the writing on the wall? Why can't some of the Players Association say, oh, we screwed up? Why can't we just get on with this and just put an end to this and, you know, get rid of these people or do something where we can get on with football on an everyday basis? But with that said, did you see what Ray Rice is now saying that TMZ did to the video? He's claiming that TMZ doctored the video. Now, I'm not a big fan of TMZ, but let's be honest. Does TMZ need to doctor the video?
All right, it's a bunch of things there. The answer, of course, is no. But and you know, this has become a messy, he said, she said, manipulation. Everything about this whole case is wrong. The prosecutor was wrong to let Ray Rice walk the streets. His wife, then fiance, I believe, was wrong to not recognize that the man she was about to marry has some issues that need to be addressed. The Baltimore Ravens were wrong to try and wipe this thing under the rug while promoting Ray Rice and his return and what a good guy he is. And the National Football League was wrong from a whole variety of perspectives. As for the dismissal or the resignation of the commissioner, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I would disagree with that. I think there's a possibility that, albeit very faint, that that will still happen, could still happen, depending upon this investigation, and it is ongoing and where it winds up leading, including the NFL's own internal investigation. But don't hold your breath on anything meaningful coming from that. But at issue here really isn't the office of the commissioner or Goodell himself. It's the way the National Football League conducts its business. The way sports leagues in general conduct their business. I think we're learning a lot. And I think it's important societally for us to pay attention to what's going on and to give serious consideration to how we want to spend our entertainment dollars and with who. Now, if you choose to ignore all this stuff and just watch the games, you're more than entitled to do that. I don't begrudge that philosophy. But I do think there's something important going on here. And the departure of Goodell won't answer the questions. These questions have very little to do with one man, but rather a systemic scenario that probably relates to every decision the National Football League makes, both on the field and off. That's what's at play here. Mark in Mississauga, hello.
Hey, Bobcat.
Hi.
I just wanted to change the page a little bit, you know, the Ray Rice, good God. You know, the Jays, disappointing season, but I got to admit, I still watch with my son. We watched a few of the games, and, you know, Jose Bautista has had a great year, as far as I'm concerned. Still one of our favorite players. That home run he hit in New York, down two. You know, I don't know the statistics on it, but it just feels that Jose's been clutch for the past 4 or 5 years, and he's been doing it consistently. Is there any way, with all that said, is there any way for this team to be a true contender with Jose still on the team? Or do we have to trade him? Like the trade talk, it hurts my heart, but, you know, I just, and I'm so impressed with the way he plays, but obviously I want the team to get better. Just wanted to hear your comments.
Well, you can't deny the possibility that it could happen, but it's very, very, very unlikely because he's arguably your best player. And I say arguably, I mean, some would point in other directions, but also that his contract is very favorable to the Toronto Blue Jays. It's not the kind of contract that you would be able to replace. The missing ingredient in trying to evaluate the possibility of a Bautista trade is, well, what's the other side of the trade? What do you get back in return? So I can't sit here and say there's zero chance that the Blue Jays would trade Jose Bautista, that there's zero chance that they would listen to an offer for Jose Bautista. Because I don't know what they might be offered in return. But it would take something very, very substantial. And I would say to you that the likelihood of a Bautista trade as a standalone is really less likely than a Bautista trade in partnership with somebody else. In other words, a multiplayer deal that involved Jose Bautista. Two players, maybe more than that even. But those kinds of deals are so rare, it's impossible to speculate even on whether that's possible or likely. Every general manager has an obligation to listen to any conversation that may be generated by another general manager with regard to his players. General managers will say, this guy, we're not trading this guy. This guy's staying put. But if the phone rings, you're going to answer it. And if the guy on the other end says, look, I know you don't really want to trade this guy, but here's what I'm prepared to do. You will listen to that. I'm quite certain. In fact, I know factually of situations historically where players have been traded where the general manager had absolutely no intent of dealing that player. Wasn't on his radar at all. If called into a news conference 5 minutes before the phone rang, or a trade talk began and was asked if they'd deal a guy, he'd confidently and honestly say no. But the nature of the deal was such that when he dissected it, it made sense. And ultimately the team proceeded with it. So never is a long time. I don't think Bautista's going to get traded. I think there are several others who would be much higher on the priority list Batista would be a difficult, any outfielder dealt by the Blue Jays under the current circumstance, with your center fielder likely leaving through free agency, your left fielder perhaps leaving through free agency, and no heirs apparent for any of the three outfield positions that you would be comfortable with. I don't think anybody's totally sold on Pilar or Goes. It's really difficult to see how you make that deal unless you're trading for another outfielder. And the apples for apples is a real tough one, unless there are extenuating circumstances like salary considerations. And I don't think the Blue Jays are going to be that tight. Kirk in Agent Court, hello.
Greetings, Bob.
Salutations.
There are three community-based owned teams in the Canadian Football League, you know, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, and Edmonton, and they're doing very well at the box office. They draw good crowds. I just wanted to ask you, and I'll hang up and listen, could that happen here with the Argonauts? Thanks.
No, is the answer. Mr. Braley can talk about it. Some people may try and opine that, hey, you know, if we did this. I would think that the people who are pushing that agenda, suggesting we'll buy, you know, buy the team and then turn into a community-owned team, are just, they don't have the money to buy the team. Looked around the CFL, saw a couple of other models and said, hey, maybe that'll work here. At the core of those scenarios, not unlike the Green Bay Packers, is one thing, and that is a rabid fan base. Fans who are prepared to not only buy tickets, not only buy logoed apparel, but are willing to invest in their franchise because their commitment runs so deep. There is no such commitment evident in the city of Toronto for the Argonauts. There are a relative handful of people that will even consider going to a game when they play. The season ticket base may be at its lowest ebb ever. The notion that throwing out some even nominal dollar amount out to the public and say, hey, you can own a piece of the Toronto Argonauts, doesn't resolve. It puts some money in somebody's pocket. Remember, it's not an annuity. If you're one of the partners that owns the Saskatchewan Roughriders, you don't get a check every year. You don't get money back. It's a not-for-profit organization that makes donations to various charities, local events, things. They don't pay anybody back. I think it would be a colossal failure. I don't think anybody would even seriously undertake it. And I find it quite insulting. It's more than laughable. It is insulting that David Braley would even imply that he's got somebody who wants to do this and that he's considering it. I think the whole thing's a joke. Andre, Mississauga, hello.
How you doing?
Hi.
Three questions. I just thought of the third one.
Okay.
I wonder if the NFL is going to do anything for retroactive punishment, because I heard Ben Roethlisberger's situation was even worse, and he did it twice, apparently. And what is that NHL goalie for Colorado? Smirnoff, I think. I can't remember his last name.
Varlamov?
Yeah. Nothing happened with him as well. I don't know if there's NHL stance on the whole issue. And last point, I'm going to see Syracuse play Florida State. I've never been to a Syracuse game before. I was wondering if you know a good spot for wings.
No, I don't. I have spent very little time in Syracuse, I must confess, so I couldn't tell you a place. I'm sure they have wing joints in Syracuse. And what was the other question? What the hell else? If you ask me multiple questions, I tend to blank. Something about retroactive punishment or something? Oh, for a Roethlisberger. I think everything's on the table. And that's why I think it's important to stay with the story. You know, my sense of this whole thing with the NFL specifically, but with other leagues as well, is if you don't, if you just nod and say, oh, okay, that's what you're doing, I get it, thank you very much, and go on about your merry way, they're not held accountable for their actions. And the agenda, essentially, of a professional sports league is to get the best possible product on the field. And so they're the wrong people to be punishing their players. They don't want them to not play. In essence, the league is punishing itself. Now, I don't think that Ray Rice's absence from the Baltimore Ravens has caused any impact on the Ravens' financial situation, their ability to sell tickets, or anything else. I mean, I know they're not selling Ray Rice jerseys. In fact, they did a thing where you could exchange your Ray Rice jersey and get another player. And like 5,000 or 9,000 or something jerseys were exchanged. Really quite stunning. But other than that, there's no real economic impact that's being felt here. But if you allow this story to die and allow the National Football League to say, hey, we made a mistake, thank you for coming, goodbye, and that's it, I think that sends the wrong message. I think that the media, at least, has a greater responsibility to the fans, to the public in general, to the sport, to say, well, wait a sec, we're going to stay on this, we're going to follow this, we're going to find out exactly what you're going to do, how you're going to fix this, and what, and as you said, what about other situations that are similar to or parallel or maybe even worse than what Ray Rice did? What's the standard going to be from now on? And why should we believe you? Now, I think it's important to continue to follow this. But if you're asking me how I think down the road this will relate to incidents that are in the past that have been adjudicated one way, will they change their minds? That's a hard one to do. I think if you expect that, you're probably expecting a little too much. But I wouldn't say it's impossible. Small chance, but a chance. Where to next, please? To Calvin in Lindsay, Ontario. Hi.
Hi. I got two questions. First question, answered however the way you think best. Where do you think the Jays go from here? It doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs. So what do they do for next year? Trades, nothing, whatever. Second question, you said this many times in the past about your feelings towards the importance of a manager and if they really can make or break. But I mean, I like John Gibbons. He had some tough cards this year dealt to him, what to do and injuries. But let's say a guy like Joe Maddon or some of these other coaches that are, you know, pretty respected. Do you think they could have done a different? Do you think the Jays would be different this year with what the team was, or does a manager more just kind of fill in the gaps?
Well, I mean, you answered your own question by acknowledging that you know what my thought process on it is. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Maddon, and it appears as if he's done a terrific job throughout his tenure in Tampa. Having said that, you know, I don't care how good the jockey is. If the horse don't want to run, you can't win the race. It's as simple as that. I mean, I can't be more direct, less direct. That's pretty much straightforward. You put nine horses on the field. If they run faster than the nine horses in the other uniforms, you're going to win. I don't discount the role of the manager entirely. I think there's some level of importance, but there's a stunning amount of evidence to support my theory. I didn't always think this. I used to buy into the philosophy that the manager was important. That changed quite some time ago, but it wasn't without observation, thought, and evidence that supported the theory that the manager is probably worth a game or two based on the decisions that he makes. I categorize managers on the way they handle their bullpen. Otherwise, I think it's a pretty straightforward job. I can't speak to, I think you want a manager who has the player's ear. I think you want a manager that has the player's respect, for lack of a better word. But we've seen teams that hated their manager win championships. Joe Torre looked like the worst manager in the history of baseball until he wound up in New York. He kept getting fired everywhere, never won with anybody, winds up in New York. And all of a sudden, here's the jockey, and you put him on secretariat. The jockey who's never won a race, barely hung on to the horse in every race before him, with it just trying not to fall off. You put him on secretariat, and he wins by 40 lengths. Now, is he the greatest jockey in the world? No. But he had the greatest horse in the world. Joe Torre, who's in the Hall of Fame, wound up with the New York Yankees at a time when George Steinbrenner was assembling, with a boatload of money, virtually an all-star lineup. Now, did Torre push some right buttons? Sure. Could a department store mannequin have pushed the same buttons and got the same results? Probably. And it's not that I don't like Joe Torre. I like Joe Torre very much. And I think he's a smart baseball guy. But I think there's a lot of smart baseball guys out there. I think managers and coaches can be bad, and that can cause you to lose games. I do not believe that managers and coaches, generally in sport, can, by their maneuvering, actually win games. I think the maneuvering that almost all managers do is predicated upon history, tradition, and consensus. Cite the case of the manager who went against the grain philosophically, not one time, but philosophically said, in this situation, the book says do this. I'm going to do something completely different, and it wound up changing the game. Think about it. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but it's so rare. And that's why I, in terms of basketball coaches, baseball managers, hockey coaches, I'm not real big on how many wins and losses they account for. Football is a slightly different animal because it's specific plays. It's a complex system. I think the coach of a football team has a greater responsibility for the outcome of the game based upon his planning in advance. You don't just put guys, you don't open the door, the gate, five guys skate out, then they come off, five other guys skate out. That's a hockey coach. I'm simplifying, yes. Basketball, you five tall guys, guard those five tall guys. Let me know when you get tired. I'll be here at the end of the bench. And baseball, you know how I feel about that. Chester from Parts Unknown. Hello.
Parts Unknown. Afternoon, Bob. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Just a quick one. I wanted to talk about the Jays farm system, and I wanted your opinion on who's to blame for the fact that 20 years they've been out of the playoffs, and they have absolutely no depth at any of the positions.
Well, what they have is they don't have imminent help. In other words, they've tapped into their system the last couple of years to get all the guys that should have been ready up here. So you don't have a whole boatload of guys, for example, at Buffalo that are just on the cusp of being impact players. Do they have guys, and with the exception of a couple pitchers, do they have position players lower in the system? They tell us they do.
Okay.
I'm not able to watch these guys. I'm only able to hear reports, so I can't give you, and I wouldn't give you, a personal evaluation on it, because it would be me BSing. I really don't know. But they say there are guys, mostly in rookie ball and Class A, still a couple of years away, that could project to fill the holes that currently exist. Unfortunately, you got to fill those holes now, and those guys aren't coming for at least two more years. So that's that's sort of where you're at. You need to put some Band-Aids on this thing for a year or two till some guys are ready. That's really where you're at.
Can I ask one more question? It's just, how do you get away from this all-or-nothing mentality? It seems for the last few years, the Jays hit home runs, they win. If they don't, they lose. Is that a BS stat, or is there something to that? It feels like it's been for 10 years now that they're beating home runs, but they can't score runs, enough runs to win.
Yeah, I'm not a big home run guy, and I think I've said that before. I understand the value of it. It's the easiest way to put a run on the board. It's only one swing of the bat. It doesn't take two or three. So I place a value on that. I don't place as great a value on that as I do, as other people do. And the reason is quite evident if you've been watching this Blue Jays team. The number of times that they put runners in scoring position with fewer than two out and are unable to execute. And when I say execute, I mean sometimes it's a bunt, but a lot of times it's just getting a fly ball to the outfield to advance a runner with a sac fly. It's hitting a ball the other way so the runner can advance. It's those little things that sometimes result in outs, but move runners into scoring position. They don't capitalize on their opportunities. And it's probably, for any fan, the most frustrating part about watching baseball, and particularly this team for the last, I don't know how many years. If you rely on the long ball, you're going to lose a lot of close games. And you're going to look back at days when you get, you wind up with two runs on nine hits. A good team will score four or five or six runs on those nine hits. And maybe there's a long ball in there. But you don't have, that's not what you're waiting for. Again, I value the home run, but I don't value it nearly as much as most other people do. Even looking at things, and I know there's a whole new set of stats. It's out there that identify this kind of stuff. And I don't pretend to understand them. But I recognize that you can be a winning team by doing things that don't show up on a traditional score sheet. And the Toronto Blue Jays this year have lost plenty of games because of their failure to execute what I think are the most basic fundamentals in the game. And I will go this far. I think there comes a time when the responsibility for that certainly is on the players themselves, but is also on the manager and the coaching staff. It's not something, should you be working on it during the season? I guess you can, and I suppose you should. But really, philosophically, this starts, late January, early February. Day after day after day, teach guys how to lay down a bunt. Let's force guys to hit it to the opposite field. One of the things, we're speaking about Jose Bautista. One of the things we've seen from him that didn't exist, 2 years ago, was his ability to go to right field on any kind of consistent basis. And with two strikes, you can see Jose Bautista trying to go to right field. And he, probably more than any other player on this team, has had success in going to the opposite field, whether it advances runners, scores runners, or just gets him a base hit. If you had eight other guys out there doing what Batista's been doing, just with that, forget the home runs, this team would be at least in the playoff race, and they aren't today. Brunson here in a bit. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.